Welcome to We Are the Rock, the official podcast for Rivers of Hope Counseling. Now, let's join our hosts and guest therapist as they discuss this month's topic.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Claudia, and we are here at We Are the Rock. So please follow and share.
Ding. Oh, my name is Devin.
My name is Adler.
And today we have a very, very special guest. Her name is Claire Foote. She's a licensed resident in counseling. Welcome, Claire.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here today. Today we're discussing a very important topic, women's mental health. And we have lots of questions for you. So get ready for this podcast, because there's a lot of information that we need to share with the audience. And just, I think, for our own knowledge,
sure.
There's a lot to be discussed. So let's start with some terms. A lot of people, this is a topic that is not very normalized in community, and people don't openly talk about mental health. So there may be some misconceptions about what anxiety is, what depression is, what being bipolar is. So if you can just define some terms for us in the audience so we can start getting familiar with the terms we'll be using throughout this podcast.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great place to start. So starting with anxiety. So that term is thrown around very frequently in our society, along with just general stress. But to give you kind of a clinical term, like the SparkNote version. So anxiety is going to be like persistent, uncontrollable worry about a variety of things. It could be something specific, such as flight, such as being scared of dogs, being scared of a plane. It could be persistent worry about just a general amount of things. It could be an exam that you have or how to pay bills. There's a ton of different ways that anxiety will manifest. From what I've seen from my experience, a lot of what people are experiencing regarding anxiety is the work-life balance that the pandemic has brought upon. You know, how am I going to work from home? When is my next check going to be sent to me? How am I going to balance this, you know, blurred boundaries with having my kids at home and having to just differentiate between work and home life? And all of those added stressors can develop into what we call anxiety. So it's uncontrollable worry about a specific person, place, thing. Anxiety can manifest physically as well. So you often will hear panic attacks. That's very common for those with anxiety. That can result in hyperventilation, issues with sleep, issues with concentration, not being able to focus. And I think what's so challenging with anxiety today is a lot of people feel there's no control. You know, anxiety is fear of not having control, essentially. And anxiety can actually turn into depression. And depression is going to be that low mood, negative emotional state. So feeling worthless, feeling hopeless, not really having goals or motivation to do anything, fatigue, low energy, a lot of that can come with depression. And what's interesting is anxiety and depression are most commonly diagnosed together. If you have symptoms of anxiety, you can also have symptoms of depression. And then bringing in bipolar, as you asked, that's going to be similar to depression, but there's going to be highs and lows. So you're going to have an elated mood where you're feeling great about yourself, high self-esteem. You feel you can accomplish everything. You're very like goal-directed. So you may be able to accomplish like five things within a couple, like a short time span. And then the next day you may wake up and those depressive symptoms will come on. So you'll feel fatigued, the really low energy, lack of motivation, isolation. That's really common in depression as well as bipolar disorder.
Now, before we move on, I have a question. Have you seen the show Euphoria?
I have not, but it's on my list to watch.
Okay, so I'm not going to give anything away, but yeah, one of the things that was, talked about in the show is bipolar. And the question came up, can someone who has bipolar disease self-realize that they have bipolar disease, or is that something that someone outside has to gotta tell them that they have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I think with social media, TV shows, TikTok, that's a huge one. I think there's a huge trend right now in self-diagnosis, you know, people seeing, you know, videos on TikTok thinking, oh, I have these symptoms. That means I have bipolar disorder. I think when it comes to getting a concrete diagnosis, yes, I think you can have a general suspicion if you meet the criteria for bipolar disorder, but what makes meeting with a like mental professional different than self-diagnosing is a lot of times it's not just the symptoms that matter. It matters like the duration, how long you've had the symptoms, to the severity of how long you've had the symptoms. So for example, like there's a TikTok that said, oh, if you have these symptoms, you have ADHD. So when, you know, someone's scrolling and they see that, they see it on Euphoria, they may be like, oh yeah, that's me. That resonates. Yes, you may have the symptoms, but the duration, a lot of times people don't pay attention to how long they've had those symptoms. And the biggest thing that I can state to that point is when it comes to if it impacts your life. So you can have those symptoms, but you also have to have the symptoms to the, you know, severity that they're impacting you in social functioning, like physical functioning, and as well as just overall, so like your biopsychosocial and, you know, psychologically. So just because you have the symptoms doesn't mean they're severe enough to impact you, if that makes sense, or to qualify for a diagnosis.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire, going back to anxiety, because a lot of people use this term so commonly all the time. I'm anxious.
Yeah.
I have anxiety. My daughter uses it all the time. Like, for example, for me coming today, I was a little bit anxious because it was a podcast I needed to get ready. So I was anxious. But when do you need to start taking it serious? When is time for you to say, look, this is not normal. I need to see a professional. What are those red flags?
Sure. It's really hard to say what is like, quote unquote, normal. But I think, you know, to, you know, answer Devin's question there, it's to like to the severity. So how severe are the symptoms? Are the symptoms preventing you, like, is your anxiety preventing you from going to work, taking care of your kids or your family? Are they to the point where you're losing sleep? Right. I think when it comes to specifying if it's quote unquote normal or abnormal, I think it's if it's impacting you, you're not able to, you know, go on with your daily activities, that sort of thing. Everyone's going to be nervous. Everyone's going to be stressed. But a little bit of anxiety is OK. It's what motivates us. It keeps us alert. It keeps us aware of our surroundings. But it's when the anxiety becomes, you know, unmanageable, I would say, and you can't like continue on with your day-to-day activities, go to work, take care of your family, that sort of thing, that's when it's worth just checking in and seeing, huh, is this an abnormal amount of stress or is this anxiety?
Okay. And then seeing that we're talking about women today and anxiety, mm-hmm. One topic that I did want to cover is postpartum depression.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm 29 years old. I'm seeing a lot of my friends and everyone around me getting pregnant, having mm-hmm. kids. So I know a lot of people are dealing with this at this moment. So can you kind of give us like a little bit of background on that?
Right. Yeah. So postpartum depression is going to have the same criteria as depression. The only difference is going to be the duration of the symptoms. And again, the severity. So for women that, you know, just had a baby, their hormones are out of whack, right? You know, that's to be expected. So, you know, a couple days after, you know, giving birth, it's going to be expected for, you know, a woman's hormones to kind of be off balance. But, you know, when she gets home, you know, once she settles in post, you know, that form of depression is going to manifest in different ways, you know, the same criteria for depression. So feelings of isolation, issues concentrating, applying it to, right, she's a woman, just had her baby. You're expected to love your baby and want to spend time with your baby. Well, having that diagnosis, sometimes you can be irritable and even angry towards your newborn baby. And I think for a lot of women, that causes a lot of confusion because they just gave birth. They're so excited to be a parent, but they're getting these conflicting messages. And I think the biggest thing that I have seen is that irritability, the anger, and just the isolation that comes from the change in hormones.
Yes. Especially during pregnancy and before pregnancy, your body starts going through all these changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, women go through changes all the time, yeah, with our hormones and everything else, right? And especially for pregnancy, you think as having a baby, it's going to be the happiest time of your life, the happiest phase of your life. Mm-hmm. But going through it myself, it truly wasn't, because I wasn't getting enough sleep. I wasn't eating well. You know, they say when the baby sleeps, you sleep, and which is like 2-3 hours, and then you wake up. And it wasn't the happiest time of my life. I mean, I was happy I had a baby, but physically I was devastated. And I think that leads again to depression, anxiety, and everything that happens after. How can you prep yourself for that? How can you prevent that from happening?
Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say what, like, there's no like step 1-3 of what you can do to avoid it. But I think there's steps you can do to, you know, prevent the likelihood of that developing. The biggest thing I can recommend is just checking in, like, your basic needs, right? I think, you know, we live in a society where we want like a very life-changing answer or a special medicine to like make our problems go away. But a lot of mental illnesses can be somewhat prevented or maintained just through basic needs. So are you getting enough sleep, right? Are you eating a nutritious, like, balanced diet? I mean, you don't have to go on some like, you know, health kick, right? You don't have to completely change your lifestyle, but sleep, diet, if you are isolating and not getting enough social connection, I think if you can check in with those things, a lot of times mental illnesses can be somewhat prevented if your basic needs are met.
So you're with postpartum depression, I know you're talking about isolation. Was mm-hmm. During COVID, was there a big spike in postpartum depression because it was a isolation kind of thing where you had to self-quarantine and stay away from others because of the spread of the disease?
So I can't speak to postpartum depression because within my experience, I have not had any clients specifically, but somewhat depression. Depression has increased. Anxiety and depression are the two most common that I have seen in the pandemic throughout my experience. And I think it speaks to that, you know, we've been isolated. No one, you know, at least at the start of the pandemic, that's where things were really heightened. Emotions were heightened. You know, a lot of people were just in a state of panic. So absolutely the isolation, the low self-esteem that comes from being isolated, that's a huge thing as well. You know, I don't have kids yet, but, you know, from my experience of, you know, people I've spoken to with, clients, that sort of thing, you know, people want to go out, right? They want to interact. They want to show off their new baby, but they can't, you know? So I think that isolation is connected to low self-esteem as well, because, you know, these women are stuck at home with their newborn babies. They want to, you know, go out, show them off, but they can't for obvious reasons. And I think that's where I see the depression coming from the most throughout the pandemic, was the low self-esteem, the isolation, the irritability from not being out socializing with others.
How do you feel that people want their significant other to be there for you? Like, feel free to chime in, everybody, but like, is it one of those things where you come home and like you've gone through something and you kind of want them to bring you chocolate, or you want them to, like, you know, I don't know. I'm just going off of things I've seen on TV, but like, those are good ideas. Like, hey, put on Grey's Anatomy for me and let's sit down and watch Grey's Anatomy. Is that like, what do you ladies like when you're going when you're telling your significant other about something you're going through, how do you want them to be there for you?
I like that question. It's different from my perspective, because my fiance will say, well, you're going to want, he's like, oh, you're reading into me. This is your job. Like how can I provide for you? And I think it goes back to just being heard. You know, with my job, there's confidentiality. So there's, you know, I can't share the details, nor do I want to, about my job. But I think, you know, if I'm having a bad day, I'm, you know, just emotionally drained or just stressed about whatever it may be, just spending quality time, you know, it's, I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Five Love Languages, but it's checking in with your partner and seeing like how they like to be received. So for me, it would be quality time. Like, I don't need gifts, chocolate. Yeah, that'd be great. But at the same time, it's just that spending quality time and just being heard. Like, whoever I'm speaking to, they don't have to have a magical answer to my problem, but just showing that they care enough to like put whatever they're doing aside to listen to me, that would definitely help me get through a stressful time. And I think that ties into, you know, as women, we process things internally, like all day, you know, we're processing internally. Where I think, you know, men, they may not understand that. So I think to be able, you're like, no.
Right now,
yeah,
I do not understand that.
So to be able to be given the space to everything I'm processing, you know, throughout the day, to be given a safe space to share that, I think would be huge.
Yeah, I agree with you. Being heard helps a lot, just to kind of decompress and vent a little bit. Everything, I internalize a lot. So once I get home, I have like this load of things I need to unload.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband usually just stays quiet and I start. and that helps me because I'm releasing all of that from my mind. And I'm a person, I've learned how to take care of my mental health. I'm very social. So I know when I'm stressed and I tend to have a little bit of anxiety and I'm kind of going down that hill, mm-hmm. I go out. So I call my girlfriends. Can we go out for dinner? Because I need to talk about something that's not related to what I'm going through, to kind of detach myself from that mode. And that has helped me throughout the years. And that's how I manage it. And people find their own techniques, what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
That has worked for me very well.
And yeah, to that point, I think detaching yourself, mm-hmm. getting something like at the end of the day, for me, it's like watching shows that are lighthearted, right? I used to be a huge fan of like Law and Order SVU or Criminal Minds. But those shows can be they're very emotional. They're very intense. So if I'm already having, you know, a tough day, I feel my like emotional thermometer is like really, really low. I'm going to watch reality TV. I'm going to watch something that makes me laugh, right? Like Family Guy, right? It's so lighthearted. The jokes are, you know, sometimes they're really stupid, but it's something that it takes my mind off of things. I can laugh at it and it's that distraction that it provides. So,
yes. Okay. And thank you for asking that question. And Adler, I'm sure you're taking notes here.
Yeah. So. I was going to say, to kind of go off of that, like, would distracting yourself kind of be like bottling it up for later? Or is it just like just pushing it aside, not worrying about it too much?
I think there's a time and place to deal with our stressors, right? I think over time, yeah, if you bottle it up and you're just constantly like, okay, I'm feeling anxious. It's so uncomfortable. I want to get rid of it, right? Because we're designed to do that. No one wants to feel uncomfortable feelings. But when they come up, I kind of use this exercise. I think of like those little post-it note flags. And if there's something that comes up throughout the day for me, I kind of like envision myself like putting a post-it on that problem and coming back to it later. So at the end of the day, with my job, you know, I'm going to want to do something to relax. So then maybe it's the next day thinking like, huh, I was feeling anxious yesterday. What was that about? You know, and coming back to it. So to your point, it's not forgetting it's there, but saving it for a time where you have the like mental capacity to sort through it and figure out what's going on.
Okay. So you always recommend like dealing with it later, even if it is a distraction that you're using, like, to go out with friends in Claudia's situation, still deal with it later, but always have to deal with it, you know?
Always, yeah, because you will feel in the moment. Of course, if the uncomfortable feeling goes away, it subsides, it's only temporary. It will always come back in some way. And if you get in the habit of, you know, suppressing your emotions, thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to think about it, over time, that becomes a behavior and a pattern. And something will happen down the line that will bring all of that stuff that you've suppressed back to the surface. And here you are having to kind of go through all of this stress that you've had for months and months on top of the current stressor, where if you would have kind of sorted through it and went along, you wouldn't have had that much, you know, it wouldn't have been that much stressful for you to have to deal with it then.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like guys and girls bottle it up differently throughout, like, their daily activities?
Yeah, of course. I feel women bottle it up, and I feel like, so internalizing, right? The rumination, the constantly overthinking. I think, you know, anxiety is more prone, it's more diagnosed in women, and it adds to the element of overthinking, constantly ruminating, like thinking, oh, I shouldn't have said this. Oh, I wonder how I looked. I wonder what I sounded like. I wonder what they're thinking of me, right? Those are all things that, you know, you're going to be thinking during day-to-day interactions. For men, I'd love to hear your point of view, but from what, you know, I know, men are kind of just straight to the point sometimes. I think, you know, men are going to take out their stressors in different ways, whether it's, you know, working out. You'll notice substance use disorders are more common in men. So I think sometimes men are going to be more prone to coping with their stressors through substances. And don't get me wrong, that's common in women too. But, you know, just to kind of answer your question, I think men tend to just want to, like, hash it out. And whether it's exercising to just get it out, whether it's, you know, going straight to that other person or dealing with the stressor, you know, face on, that's what I have seen. And I think that's why women are more prone to developing the anxiety and depression, is because they harbor it. They keep it in, and kind of, I envision like a rubber band ball. Like, each time there's a stressor, you just add to that ball and then it bursts. Guys, I feel like they never get to that point where it adds up.
So, to kind of chime in on what you're saying, and I'm not saying that I'm doing it, but how often do you see that a good stress reliever is video games?
I see it all the time. So it's not a bad thing. I would, you know, kind of check in too to see if it's added stress, because I don't know about you, but, you know, when my fiance is playing games, he gets aggravated and is yelling at his computer. And I'm like, this is a stress reliever for you. But again, it's adding to that element, which I was talking about earlier, of distraction. You know, it provides that relief. You can talk to your guys, you know, in game. And I think a lot of the games, you create your own world, or you're playing in an atmosphere that is different than the life you're currently living in. So again, it's adding to that distraction that I think in short term, it's okay. But over time, if you feel every time you are like experiencing a negative, uncomfortable emotion and you don't know what to do with it, if you constantly game and you feel it resolves it, cool. But I think a lot of times the problem's still there. We just get that, you know, short-term fix, like through the video games. But that's definitely not unheard of. Yeah.
Devin, if you play video games, just say it. We won't judge. No, I think not. Just be honest.
I'll tell you what, after a long day of work, sometimes I do go home and play video games. And, you know, sometimes I went through my remote, through my TV. But afterwards, sometimes when you win one of those hard games, like for instance, like me and Adler, we play Apex Legends together. You know, sometimes it's like to the point where you're just like, but then like other moments, you're just like, wow, we won. That's like, that's huge. And like, sometimes you just need a win on your day. And that's sometimes big for me. I get home and I get a win on the game, and that's my win for the day. And I'm happy after that.
What was the game you said you play?
Apex Legends.
Is that League of Legends?
Different, but great game.
Okay.
League of Legends is a
great game. Know, but I was like, Legends, huh? Is it the same game or not?
No. We have played both.
Do you play League of Legends?
I do not. That's my fiance's area, but I hear it all the time and I'm like, I know nothing about it. But you said Legends and I was like, huh, I wonder if that's the same game.
I understand his anger now.
Because, sometimes going off of the game, it's just like, even if you've been losing all day and that one win just kind of is like, oh, I won. All right. I don't have to care for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm good at this point.
Yeah.
So that's usually how it is. Like after a long day at work, if it was stressful, even if it wasn't stressful, even that just having a win for the day, even if everyone sees the rest of your day as a win, it's like, oh, now you actually see oh, you're the winner.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, all right, cool.
It's that validation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Claire, I want to go back just for a few minutes and just switching gears a little bit. You talked about mental health for women versus men. And you also touched upon the physiology. It's different for women than men. I'm not an MD, so I don't know, but I've heard that women go through a lot of changes through life. And when I say changes, I mean hormonal changes. Mm-hmm. I remember when I took my teen to see a therapist, she told me, you have to be careful how you talk to her because they're changing about 45 to 50 hormones during this phase of their life. I'm like, whoa, that's a lot. You know, and you, if you add that to your personality, I mean, that's why a lot of teens and preteens go through all these drastic changes in moods. But we are not professionals, so we don't know that. And she said, be very careful how you talk to her because she's like right at the edge, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she explained to me that. So I think just going back to women's mental health, if you add mental health to your physical health, that leads to a lot of mental illnesses because your body's going through all these changes all the time and they're very drastic.
Yeah. And you'll notice that, especially with adolescents, I work with a lot of, 14 to 17 year olds and, they're going through hormonal changes. So I think those hormones, absolutely, they're going to play a role. They're going to feel, sometimes more irritable. People's opinions are going to impact them more. They're going to want to take on that information, right? When you're 14 to 17, your social support, right? That's going to be the reason you want to go to school, right? Is to talk to your friends and that sort of thing. So that just means you're going to be more susceptible to their feedback. So I think that's one thing that, I'm seeing recently too, is the stressors just within friend groups and, the negative messages that are being passed around. You add social media into that. There's the societal pressures. So, societal pressures on top of the hormones, yeah, makes a really tough combination. So, your daughter's, was it her doctor?
Yes.
Had said that? Yeah. It's, as a mom, it's probably hard because you want to be there for her and let her know hey, I'm here. I don't know exactly what you're going through, but I think to your point, yeah, the hormones are definitely going to impact physical changes as well.
Claire, and just for a moment, just going back to the children and the different generations, a mental illness can't live in a family and go from generation to generation, like diabetes and other illnesses. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. Same with mental illness. I think, genetics absolutely play a role, as well as environment. It's you'll probably hear the term intergenerational trauma. For example, if a woman, grew up in a home with her mom was very evasive, didn't talk about emotions, was very standoffish, in denial of, maybe a mental illness she was going through or didn't believe in mental illness. Her daughter is going to absorb that. And then when she has a child, that can get passed down. So to your point, yes, it's definitely genetics play a role, but also the view of mental illness. I know with a lot of women in Indian cultures, Asian cultures, there's a huge stigma with mental illness that it doesn't exist. So, not only do they believe oh, what's mental illness? Or it's that idea of, we don't talk about mental illness. You know, it's bad. It's negative. So that kind of perception of mental illness can pass down. So it can pass down genetically, but also just through interaction, and the ideas of mental illness can definitely pass down from generation to generation. And it's unfortunate too, but it's the reality of, you know, how, right? So I'm going to have a view of mental illness based off of how I was raised, you know, and same thing for my mom. And I think with this generation, the great thing about social media is I'm seeing a huge surge in younger clients seeking therapy, which I think it's like, yes, it's unfortunate that they're going through these things, but that's the reality of life. And for me, I'm like, yes, it's very fortunate because they can kind of stop that intergenerational trauma because they're young, they're seeking out help. So then when they have kids, they're older, they will be able to tell their kids, like, yes, mental illness is a thing. I believe it. I got help for it. And so can you.
So what would you say are, circumstances to look out for people listening? What are circumstances to look out for where you really need to evaluate, I may need to get some help?
Yeah. I think isolation, you know, if you notice a friend, a family member that's just withdrawing, you know, they're making maybe a lot of excuses. Like, don't get me wrong, you could be an introvert and not want to hang out every month, but it's that change in behavior. Isolation is, I think, one of the biggest indicators of something going on. Expressing just not having hope for the future. It, you know, having feelings of low self-esteem, guilt, helplessness, changes. If like you have a friend that's changing like their appetite, or, you know, they feel they have to exercise hours and hours, 7 days a week, you know, some of that can kind of be an indicator like, why do they feel the need to exercise 5 hours, 7 days a week? Is it body image? Is it stress? You know, it's just kind of tuning in to lifestyle changes, but isolation and expressing like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I feel like there's no point, you know, hearing things like if I don't wake up tomorrow, I'd be better off. Like those are some indicators of you know, mental illness onset. And again, it's taking it with a grain of salt. Just because someone's hopeless doesn't mean that they're going to have depression, but it's just, those are things to look out for. I think isolation's your number one.
Okay. And then speaking from like a teen perspective, or not really like a teen perspective, but like, if you were like a parent in that situation and you saw your kid starting to be isolated when they're like this extroverted person, mm-hmm. how would you deal with that situation? Do you take it head on, or do you just, I know you mentioned earlier to like kind of just mention that, oh, hey, I'm here for you if you ever need to talk. But when does it get to a point that you can't just be there for them?
Mm-hmm. I think doing research, right? So I'm not a parent yet, but doing research on what resources are out there. So when you go to have that conversation, you know, with your child, you can say like, hey, you know, I may not be able to help, but I have this person and this resource and this that I want to give to you. Or, hey, I have this information. If you feel you get to a point where you're unable to work through this on your own and you don't want to tell me, here's the resources. It's going to depend on age. You know, minors, they're obviously going to need like parental consent. But even when you're 18, right? 18-year-olds don't always have access to those resources that are out there. So, you know, advice I can give to parents is having open communication. Just because you may not agree with what, you know, your child is going through, or what they want, or the changes they want to see within the home, you can accept them, but it doesn't mean you're approving, right? So acceptance does not mean approval. As a parent, you know, if your child going through, it could be like an individual in the LGBTQ community, right? You know, they want their parents to call them by like their preferred pronouns, or, you know, accept their, you know, their choices, right? Their decisions. I think you don't have to agree with them, but just letting them know you're there, you're willing to listen, and admitting like, hey, I may not know how to help, but I can get you the help you need. It's, you know, people look for this life-changing answer, but the power of just listening and validating and admitting when you don't have the answer works wonders, especially for adolescents. Mm-hmm. And the way into that conversation too is through interest, right? Like the parent may have no interest in the video game their child's playing, but, you know, kind of using that as like, oh, like I've seen you've been talking to people, you've been playing this game, like what's going on in this game? Help teach me so I can play. That kind of lets the parent in. And the child is hearing, hey, like my mom, my dad has an interest in what's going on in my life. And through those connections of shared interest, then those harder conversations are easier to have.
Thank you, Claire. And thank you for all the insight and all the information you provided today. It was extremely helpful. And I want to thank you. And I also want to share that women's health is everyone's responsibility, not just us, it's everybody. And thank you, Devin and Adler, for commenting on that, because, you know, you are observing all these things and asking, like, how do you even approach these type of situations when you see your mom or your girlfriend or someone close to you going through this? Because it is difficult as a woman to endure these mental changes and how to address them properly. And for me, just listening to you and how you elaborated when I mentioned how I decompress and de-stress, just going out with my friends, checking in later, I don't do that. So I kind of take myself away from that, but I kind of just let it sort of go away on its own. But I don't really go back to reassess it. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that, because I will start doing that moving forward. Because I think that's very important to do, just to kind of go back and reassess the situation versus just, you know, ignoring it all the time or finding ways to feel better. So that's one of the biggest takes away from me on this conversation. And I want to thank you, Claire, for being here today. You share so much information for the audience, for all of us.
Thank you.
We're very grateful for the conversation and everything you provided to us today.
Thank you for listening to We Are The Rock, the official podcast for Rivers of Hope Counseling. Visit us online at riversofhopecounseling.com or call us at 855-326-HOPE to schedule your session. Follow us on social media and remember to share this podcast with your friends and family. And tune in next month. Rivers of Hope Counseling, for a better tomorrow.